It is now my great pleasure to introduce to you Graham Innes. Graham is the former Disability Discrimination Commissioner. He was our Disability Discrimination Commissioner from 2005 till just recently, till last month when his term ended. He's also served as the Human Rights Commissioner and Race Discrimination Commissioner. He is a lawyer, mediator and company director. He has been a human rights practitioner for 30 years operating in New South Wales, Western Australia and nationally. Graham has led or contributed to the success of a number of important initiatives, including the drafting of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities and its ratification by Australia. Graham has been a fabulous role model for me. He's been a great advocate for the cause of disability. And as I said to him just before, he's come a long way from having been made redundant by an answering machine when he worked at Western Australia Lotteries. It is my great pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce to you Graham Innes to deliver our keynote address.
Well, thanks very much for that introduction, and may I too acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet. Good morning. Oh, you've lied to me, Robin. There's no one here. Let me try that again. Good morning.
Good morning.
Ah, we're awake. Thank you for the opportunity to come and speak with you this morning. As a worn-out old advocate and no longer the Disability Discrimination Commissioner, I wondered if you'd want me to come down here to talk when, all discrimination against people with disabilities in Australia has been fixed. Oh, hasn't anyone told you that? Isn't that your experience? Well, I thought that's why we didn't need a full-time Disability Discrimination Commissioner anymore, with lived experience of disability and who knows the disability sector. I thought that's why we could take 1.6 million from the National Advocacy Program. I thought that all of us had jobs and we were off welfare, so the changes to the DSP weren't a problem. At least that's what the government and the Attorney General told me. Maybe he got it wrong. What do you think? Is that true?
No.
Okay, well, if that's the case, I suppose I'd better throw away the celebratory speech that I'd planned. I better cancel that case of champagne, Robin, that we'd ordered. If there's still some discrimination around, and if there's still a need for advocates, and, if we haven't all got jobs and so don't need to worry about the DSP changes, I suppose I better throw away that speech and we'd better do something about it. We are advocates after all. So, sorry, forget the celebrations. Normal service has resumed. Okay, now that I've got my attempt at some Monday morning wake-up humour off my chest, I have to make a confession. I like to make my confessions early. I find it's best to get them out of the way. The original plan for this part of the program was to get someone who'd, start the conference off with a bang, inspire you all with his amazing story, and motivate you all for the rest of the conference. But also motivate you in the rest of your work for the time to come. And I know who was on the original program, and he would definitely have done that. But he couldn't come. So you've got me instead. I'm just, thanks very much, I've got two fans, that's very good. I'm just some ex-commissioner who the committee found hanging around outside the conference centre, thought I looked a bit cold, and who's going to run a Q&A type session this afternoon, and they asked me if I could, fill up this hour. So I'll do my best, all right? But you have to help me. Now, you may have to answer some questions. because, you know, if I run out of things to say, that's how I fill in the time. I just start asking questions. And if you do, you need to remember my one behavioural fault. Well, the one fault that I'm prepared to admit. Robin knows a few of the others, but I'm hoping she keeps them quiet. If you put up your hand to give me an answer, oh, someone's got this, I'll completely ignore you, right? So just break all those old school rules, and if I ask you a question, call out the answers. All right, so here's the first question. What gets you out of bed in the morning? Well, you know, it's funny you should say that, because for me it's usually, for me it's usually one or perhaps two bloody strong cups of coffee. And, of course, your coffee down here doesn't stack up against the coffee that we make in Sydney. So I'm in trouble from the start. And if that comment hasn't upset you altogether, let me tell you that I also barrack for the West Coast Eagles. Right, well, okay, so I should have the whole audience offside by now, but really, what does get you out of bed in the morning? Now, if you were teenagers going to work, yeah, true. If you were teenagers, the clear answer would be your mother. It's probably basic bodily functions, you know, going to the bathroom, being hungry, having a partner who snores. But let's try and lift this to a slightly higher level. What motivates you to do what you do? And I want you to think about that this morning. Because conferences such as this, as well as being a great chance to learn, both formally from the presenters and informally from your peers, and yes, I've read about the speed dating sessions at the... Oh, it's not speed dating, speed networking sessions at the beginning of each day. But conferences like this are a great opportunity to consider that question. So I want to start your thinking about that question this morning. I want to talk about what we do in our role as advocates. And I want to remind you all that what you do matters. You become involved at a key time in people's lives, and you can have a great impact on the quality of those lives. Now, I've been asked to motivate you, and a few months after one of the cruelest federal budgets that I've ever seen, I've been asked to motivate you. Right. What I love about Robin and this conference committee is that they only set you small challenges, you know. So I want to start with the words of a poet of our time. And she is a poet of our time. She sings them, but you'll be pleased to hear that I don't plan to do that. And here are those words. Have you ever fed a lover with just your hands? Closed your eyes and trusted. Just trusted. Have you ever thrown a fistful of glitter in the air? Have you ever looked fear in the face and said, I just don't care? It's only half past the point of no return, the tip of the iceberg, the sun before the burn, the thunder before the lightning, and the breath before the phrase. Have you ever felt this way? Now, does anyone recognise those words? Yeah, well done. Who's on the ball? There's a dish of jelly beans in the centre of your table. You're allowed to have two right now. Yep. Yeah, Pink from her Grammy Awards song, Glitter in the Air. I heard her sing them beautifully in one of her Sydney concerts some years ago, and I was entranced when I heard them. And they and a few of her other songs are songs that I listen to regularly on my iPod. Now, many people think that they only apply to opportunities for love, but I actually think that they beautifully capture a broader message for life, to throw glitter in the air, to take the opportunities that life presents, and to live life to the full. I'm very much in favour of the view that if you're not doing that, if you're not living on the edge in that way, then you're taking up too much room. But living life to the full shouldn't only be an opportunity for 4/5 of the population. it should also be an opportunity for Australians with disabilities. And despite what the attorney tells us, discrimination still exists, and we can't live life to the full in our present community. And that's why we need advocacy. So let me move from one iconic American woman of today, that is Pink, to another iconic American woman of the 1960s. Yes, you know, the 1960s, back in that period of history known as the last century. Okay, I'm talking about Rosa Parks. Can anyone tell me who was Rosa Parks? The bus. Yeah, I heard the word bus in the centre here. Fantastic. Have two more jelly beans. So perhaps you will remember that Rosa Parks refused to sit at the back of the bus. In the 1960s, in the United States, millions of dollars were spent on providing public transport systems. But in many places, if you were black, you could only ride at the back of the bus. And Rosa's actions in refusing to do that was one of the sparks of the civil rights movement. But you might say, that was way back then. It wouldn't happen in Australia today to a particular group of people, would it? Well, I would say, wouldn't it? And for many people with disability, sitting at the back of the bus still isn't possible. We can't even get on the bus. And that's just one of many examples where opportunities are not equal in the world in which we all live and work. So let me tell you a story, because it underlines the importance of the work which we all do and the amazing assumptions that we've all experienced often about people with disabilities, about ourselves or about others we know with disability. Now, I'd completed a meeting with some senior bank officials in Brisbane. Yep, this is an only in Queensland story. I'm sorry about the Cairns group that's here. You might want to close your ears for this story. But walking with my guide dog, I got into the lift on the 30th floor of their building at the same time as another person. Now, surprise, surprise, the lift buttons weren't marked with raised letters or braille, so I didn't know which one to press. And turning to the other person in the lift, I said, "Could you please press the button for ground?" No response. Now, thinking that he may have a hearing impairment, you know, remember I used to be the Disability Discrimination Commissioner, so I was a bit aware of those sorts of things, I looked directly at him so that he could read my lips and said a bit more clearly, a bit more enunciated. You'll note that I didn't say it a bit more loudly, because that doesn't really help in that situation. "Could you press ground, please?" Still no response. More puzzled, I reached over and I tapped him on the shoulder and repeated my request. "Oh," he said, "are you talking to me? I thought you were asking the guide dog." Now, my guide dog is pretty good, but she hasn't learned to read lift buttons yet. Now, I'm sure that all of you could tell me many more stories like that one. About assumptions made about people with disabilities. And in my experience, most of those assumptions are negative and most of them are wrong, but they still keep being made. So people with disabilities keep having to deal with what I describe, and I've stolen someone else's words, as the soft bigotry of low expectations. Now, as well as swimming against the tide of negative attitudes and assumptions, people with disabilities are disadvantaged in relative terms in today's society. Let's look at three measures of that disadvantage. And I'm not going to talk about all the disadvantage because, frankly, we haven't got time. But firstly, there's a high correlation between people with disabilities and poverty. 45% of us live in or near poverty. This is due to low incomes, fewer employment opportunities, and additional costs due to our disability. I don't need to bore you with all the statistics. You've heard them all before. Some of you have probably experienced them. Secondly, whilst Australia experiences relatively low unemployment, when you think about Spain, where it's been up around 30-35%, this is not the case for people with disabilities. were employed at a rate 30% lower than the general population. And when we are employed, we're usually underemployed. And we are often just employed in one position and forgotten about. And the third indicator of disadvantage is the level of people with disabilities in or who have had contact with the criminal justice system. There are high rates of people with psychosocial and intellectual disability in prisons across Australia. In fact, prison is a significant accommodation option for people with disabilities. And how shameful is that? 90% of women with intellectual disability, 90%, 9 out of 10, have been sexually assaulted at some time during their lives. And there are high rates of violence towards people with disabilities, particularly people in institutional settings. And when we report it, the justice system often doesn't cater for our particular needs, so it often goes unpunished. As I said, you know the stats better than I do. So those, and many others that I haven't talked about, but which you understand more intimately, are the challenges or barriers facing people with disabilities. And we as advocates have the task of supporting people with disabilities through or around those barriers. That's what we're all about. We have the challenge of assisting people, often with fewer life skills, to make decisions which will profoundly affect their quality of life for the future. So what gets you out of bed is working with some of the most disadvantaged and disempowered people in Australia. So, no pressure, okay? That is a seriously awesome challenge. Now, some of you here might say, at this point in my presentation, that I'm not doing what the committee told me to. I mean, I was asked to motivate you. And all that I've done for the last 10 or so minutes is tell you funny stories and demonstrate how hard our job is and what a huge challenge we have, ask a few questions and tell you that you're able to have some jelly beans which you already could have eaten anyway. And after hearing all of this, you might just go back to that bed and curl up in the fetal position. But I haven't told you anything that you don't already know. And yet you're all here, not in that bed back at home. And why is that? Because we're in this job, the job of advocacy, and many of us have been in it for many years because we, perhaps against the odds, are determined to support people with disabilities to successfully overcome those barriers and live life without them. We believe that just like every other Australian, people with disabilities have a right to take a risk and to own their own destiny. We know that when we come into contact with people with disabilities, or if we're people with disabilities ourselves, we'll be making critical decisions. What you wear, what you do, where you live, where you work. Sometimes with our support as advocates for the first time. And we believe that it's both their right and it's also critically important that they can make those decisions and not just be presented with limited or no options. Even though in some cases they may make the wrong decisions, we believe they should have a broader choice and the right to make those decisions in the same way as everyone else. Taking that choice away is denying people with disabilities our rights. So we're in the forefront of creating opportunities for people with disabilities. And we know that if we don't facilitate those broad options, the chance to take those risks and the right to fail, it's less likely that anyone else will do so. We know that if people don't succeed, our job is to figuratively, as advocates, is to figuratively pick them up, brush them off, and support them to try again. We know that if we don't see potential and encourage it and advocate for it, then there's little hope of changing other people's attitudes. So we find out how to draw out that potential, what skills we need to draw it out, and how to maximise that chance of success. That's what advocacy is all about, having a can-do approach and finding a way to remove those barriers. So you don't need me to motivate you. You would have to be some of the most motivated people that I know to continue with those sorts of challenges. There are many different ways and forms of advocacy. You know more about them than I do, although I've been around in the area for a while. But let's look at just one story on a DVD from the 20 Years, 20 Stories series made while I was still at the Australian Human Rights Commission. And I understand that if you enjoy it this time, you can see more of these stories out in the real zone. Just make sure you're in here for the sessions that I'm in, all right? But I want to show you this story because it illustrates two contrasting advocacy styles. So let's have a look at this video, which is called Room for Change.
Stella Young, a young woman with short hair, big sunglasses, a black dress and stockings, cruises down a city footpath in a wheelchair and enters a clothes store.
I think there's an underlying assumption that, you know, people who use wheelchairs, of course, wouldn't be interested in fashion, which is absolutely not true.
I really like to look my best, and just because I have a disability doesn't mean it should be any different.
Well, this place actually used to be a bookshop, and when it was a bookshop, it was over two levels, both of which were independently accessible. So you could access one level from inside the jam factory and one level from the street. But when it became a Topshop, which I was really excited about because it's a UK brand that we haven't had access to here, they renovated it to put it over three levels. The middle level was not independently accessible at all, so it completely ruined the access of the whole shop. They had this little lift between those three levels, and the manager said, well, there's a key somewhere for that lift. Not quite sure where it is, but let me go and check. He came back with this enormous ring of keys and kept trying them all, not able to find the key for these lifts. So it was completely useless having them if people can't actually use them, if no one knows where this key is. And everybody was very nice. The store manager offered to lift my chair, and I said, I doubt you get paid enough in fashion retail to break your back lifting me into a shop. And, you know, I really like clothes, but no outfit yet has been worth my dignity and being carried into a store. So, I left a very unsatisfied customer.
Text Madeline Sob.
I was shopping for a dress to wear for a friend's birthday party, and I wanted to try on a dress, but I couldn't access the fitting rooms. The ideal thing is for me to be able to purchase clothing and take it home and try it on and take it back in a couple of days if I don't like it or if it doesn't fit. I asked if I could take the clothes home. The sales assistant just didn't get it and just kept saying no, flat out no. I felt quite annoyed, and I made a complaint to the Australian Human Rights Commission, and I wanted to use the legislation to get something done about it.
I actually decided that the best way to tackle this was actually through Twitter. There's nothing like some bad press to get people to act. So I tweeted that I found it very disappointing that Topshop couldn't provide access. And they saw my tweet and got straight back to me and said, can we please have your email address? We'd like to talk to you about what happened. So I emailed them some details of what had taken place, but I found it very disappointing that not only had they renovated the shop to make it so that it was not independently accessible, but no one actually knew how to use the assisted access that was in place.
The Human Rights Commission contacted me and wrote a letter to the owners of the shop and said that they that I had put a complaint in and they had to do something about it, basically.
Text, unlike Madeline's retailer, Globalise have a great attitude and were happy to support this film.
We try to have one big fitting room in all of our Globalise stores. If for some reason that is not big enough, we have the policy where you can try clothes on at home and then bring them back if they don't fit for a full cash refund. So that's a simple way of going about a problem that can be avoided.
So if you have any problems with these at all, just bring them straight back.
If there's any particular fuss about it, you can just purchase the clothes. If they don't fit, you can just bring them straight back.
That's it. See you later.
within a week, I got an email back from them to say that they'd not only changed the settings on the lift so that you no longer needed a key to operate them, but all of the staff in this store had been given disability awareness training, and they sent me a $100 gift voucher so I could go back and have a much more accessible clothes purchasing experience. I think they handled that situation very well, and I think it's a good outcome for all concerned, and I'll buy their clothes for many years to come, because accessible fashion is always good.
In the end, they wrote a letter back to me through the Human Rights Commission saying that they're very sorry that I was inconvenienced and that they would allow people with disabilities to buy clothing from their store and take it back within 2 days.
Look, I think social media is a fantastic tool for social change. And whether it's, tweeting your dissatisfaction about a product or a service or a company, it's public. Everyone can see it. I think as soon as people hear the words disability discrimination, they get quite nervous. Not only is it really uncool, but, you know, there are legal ramifications for discriminating against people with disabilities. And I think that it's really important that while we can use social media, we do have legislation that can back us up as well.
Credits Room for a Change. Producer, director Sarah Barton. Grit Media. Camera Rob Murphy. Editor Simon Moore. Online producer, editor Leslie Hahn.
So there we go. Two different styles of advocacy. One on Twitter, one through lodging a complaint with the Human Rights Commission. But Grit Media, I think, really put together a good story of how we can change society for not just for ourselves, but to benefit a whole lot more people. And good on Stella and Madeline for taking those issues on in that way. So let's go back to being some of the most motivated people that I know, because that's where we were before we had a little look at that film. But rather than allowing us to rest on our laurels, as the committed change agent that I am, I want us to continue to find those barriers and to work with people with disabilities to overcome those barriers. You know, when I was young, many people told me that I couldn't be a lawyer, and many others wouldn't give me a legal job. And Robin is right. My first job as a qualified lawyer, having finished university with a law degree, was to answer the telephone and tell people the winning lotto numbers. And, of course, you needed a law degree to do that. And then I was made redundant from that job by an answering machine. But I, and people like you who advocated for me all those years ago, knew that I could. I can't imagine my life without the chance to take the risks that I took to get where I am today. I can't imagine a society diminished because it lacks the contribution that Australians with disabilities can make in all areas of life. And I'm profoundly saddened by the knowledge that many people with disabilities were never encouraged to take those risks and grab those chances. So thanks for the work that you do to give people with disabilities the chances and the encouragement that I was given all these years ago, because that's really what advocacy is. You should use this conference to hone your skills and to replenish your energy. Advocacy and barrier removal needs all of the skills and all of the energy that we can muster. And you should continue to work hard to provide those opportunities for the people for whom we advocate. Don't be stopped by thinking that you, one individual, can't make a difference. Because you know what? The reality is that it's only the individuals who ever do make a difference. So encourage and work with people with disabilities to remove those barriers, grasp opportunities, live on the edge, and throw that glitter into the air. Thanks for the chance to speak with you this morning. Now, I'm happy to answer questions, and Robin tells me that there's a couple of volunteers with microphones who will come around. So if you put your hand up, they'll... excellent. I'll look forward to your question. Oh, I think we've got some people to do it.
Alex.
Oh, well, that's okay. They'll talk, so I don't need to worry. Yeah, thanks. Okay, so let's take... Who's got the microphone?
I've got a question on that question about when you wake up of a morning. My answer is that I feel the great thing of me waking up of a morning would be to feed my pet cat.
Oh, okay. Well, and she wakes you up in the morning.
Yeah.
I had a cat wake me up this morning. I'm not a big cat person, but I was staying in someone else's house and I had that experience. I'd much have preferred coffee to cats, but anyway. But thanks for that. Any other questions? Yep, great. We'll just get a microphone for you.
Hi, Graham. Michelle Stevens here from Deafblind Victorians.
Hi, Michelle.
And also Australian Deafblind Council. I just wanted to make a comment to say that particularly for those of us who are deafblind, in Victoria we are quite lucky because we can get interpreters sometimes. Secondly, I feel that particularly for the deafblind community from other parts of Australia, New South Wales, Queensland, advocacy would be at least 40 to 50 years behind many other groups of disabled people. I share your concerns for the future for people with disabilities, particularly with how watered down I think NDIS is eventually going to be. I feel very uneasy about our future because this government wants to cut, cut, cut. So what we should do to government is say, OK, take away your hearing or take away your sight, cut your legs off so you have to use a wheelchair and see how you would cope with these cuts.
Thanks for that. I actually don't share your view about NDIS. I think that if we look at NDIS and how it was piloted through the last budget, which is the worst budget, in the cruelest budget in my memory in terms of, you know, the cuts and the damage that it's done to the disability sector, I think that NDIS fared very well. I mean, it hasn't been cut yet. I think there's actually a real commitment to NDIS, and I'm feeling optimistic about the National Disability Insurance Scheme. I think we've got a good and a supportive minister in Mitch Fifield, and I think the state governments are working hard to keep the Commonwealth honest on NDIS. So I do feel positive about NDIS, but there have been some other significant changes which really do need to be addressed. And you are right, the disability sector has had it pretty tough as a result of the budget, and I see that there's been some analysis done that came out just this weekend showing that the biggest impact from the budget is on the poorest people. So I'm not surprised to read that, but it's interesting to see the economic analysis around it. So that just means that our task as advocates has increased, and we've just got to keep working at it. But thank you. Other questions, please.
I'm Greg Falconer.
Hi.
Hi, nice to meet you. And
yep.
I'll come for as South Advocacy Group meeting when I joined up, and I enjoy it. I'll just come for socialise and have a speak for the microphone, tell what I've been doing.
Right.
And I've been... We'll just come down for it at the night. We're going to sleep over here tonight. So, yeah. So we'll come for the meeting. So...
Well...
And also, the Sasastri Group is South Africa, And they're doing really well that we support everyone around the community.
Uh-huh. Well, that's fantastic. I'm really pleased that you're here, and thanks for telling us about that. And, you know, that's what we need, that sort of advocacy all around the state and the country to pursue those sorts of issues, because All of those 20 Years, 20 Stories films that you can see out in the real zone, as I understand, as some of the videos that are going to be shown, really demonstrate how people can not only change their own lives, but can change the lives of a whole lot of other people with disabilities. So thank you for that. Other questions, please.
Hi, Graham. It's Shauna.
Hi,
my question relates to the film we've just watched.
Yeah.
And that is when I've put in countless human rights complaints about change rooms in chain stores, and you find that you eventually get them to change the one change room, but if you have to visit that same store in another suburb, you run into the same problem. I was just wondering, is the commission any closer when somebody puts in a complaint against a big store like Kmart, Big W or whatever, that if they've built all their change rooms exactly the same, so that means wheelchairs don't fit in any of the stores, that they're going to be, they have to make a sweeping change, not just one store at a time.
Yeah. Look, that's a problem often with discrimination complaints. There's a couple of tips that I would give you about lodging discrimination complaints. The first is, as an advocacy organisation, don't get caught on this business about complaints being confidential. So what you should do is that the day you lodge the complaint, put out a media release saying that you've lodged the complaint, who it's against, and you know the sort of outcomes that you're looking for to resolve the complaint. And then when they come to you in the conciliation and say, oh, well, we're prepared to settle with you, but we want the settlement to be confidential, and then you can say to them, oh, well, the problem with that is, of course, that the complaint's on the public record because we put out a media release, so it's probably better for your publicity if we actually publicise the fact that we've settled the complaint. So that's the first tip. And the second tip when you're lodging complaints is that you, if you're lodging them against a chain store or a big department, you know, a group of department stores, that you ask for the settlement not to be that the change room be fixed in that store, but that the policy for building of all change rooms be that they be made accessible, and then you can get the broader outcome. So it's often where you start your negotiations from that can make a difference. Now, my boss for the day, Robin, tells me I can take one more question before morning tea.
Good, it's me.
Excellent.
Graham, it's Liz here. I'm really interested in knowing how the disability discrimination portfolio can be managed by Susan Ryan. However competent she is, because it's a big, vast portfolio and it covers many things, and even with the support of her colleagues and other commissioners, it's a downgrade. How are disability discrimination issues and matters going to look in the future, or from now into the future?
Well, the short answer is, and I'm a great fan of Susan's as well, she's a great age discrimination commissioner and a colleague of mine, so these comments I'm going to make aren't aimed at her. The short answer is she can't manage it. That's the reality. It's not possible. I couldn't manage it full-time with lived experience of disability and knowledge of the disability sector. There were many, many things that I couldn't do. So the short answer is she can't manage it. And you know, that's one of the disadvantages that the disability sector have experienced as a result of the budget. And there's only one thing that we as advocates, I think, can do about that, and that is to either write to or go and knock on the door of our local members of parliament, whichever party they're from, and say, hey, do you know that the Disability Discrimination Commission position has been, a commissioner's position has been downgraded? This is not working for us. This is a real problem for the disability sector. What are you going to do about it? Now, when an MP gets a letter like that, it actually counts as they view them as being, there's at least 100 people unhappy about that issue if they receive one letter, because all the other 99 probably will complain about it, but they won't actually write. And when they receive a visit, someone who actually asks for an appointment to go and see them, it's regarded as 1,000. So it's a really powerful thing to do. And I would encourage as many as you as possible to go and do that, because that's the only way that that issue will be addressed. Can I just say thanks again for the chance to speak with you this morning. I'm going to be here for much more of the day because we're doing the Q&A later on. And look forward to catching up with you. And Robin's probably got some announcements before morning tea. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Robin. That's great.